I learned as an absolute reality, a truth, is that the majority of addictions have nothing to do with external chemicals. The majority of addictions involve behavior. And it struck me about halfway through that 25 years that repetitive behaviors change our body. They change the chemicals within our body. They change the pathways within our brain. And once that's been done, the drive to continue those behaviors is, it becomes a chemical necessity because our bodies have changed chemically. And we, as our bodies our body is a pharmaceutical factory. Our body creates all sorts of chemicals that motivate us. You know, you've got adrenaline that gets you running. You got the dopamines and stuff that get you calmed down. And, you know, you got the one pill that makes you bigger and the other one that makes you smaller, and they're all inside, you know. And every time you continue a behavior over and over again, your body can become addicted to the chemicals that it itself produces. Plus, your brain has created a new pathway that makes it so much easier to continue that behavior over and over again. There's all kinds of controversy or difference of opinion on how long it takes for your brain to build a new pathway. Has anybody ever heard how long it takes? What's the current thing? Yeah, I always heard something like a month.
No, actually, the theory's out.
The theory's out. Nobody knows.
So what is the new?
It's varied. The thing is, when your body recognizes that you've done something perfectly, that there is that flow from the beginning to an end, it clings to it. It gets it. So it's once is enough when you really feel it in your body. However, the tracks of the old behaviors are still there. So it's very easy to reverse.
Yes. You can do it. But the other piece of that, besides the brain pathway, is the reward chemicals that our body produces. And so it actually feels good to repeat those behaviors, and you just become addicted to it. And I know I've got my behavioral addictions. I know it. I sense them, and it's really tough to change them because my body's used to the reward it gets by continuing them. And I become one of those hungry ghosts. But the good thing is, I kind of feel like that thing where Gandhi was on top of the roof and he was starving himself to death, you know, to get the country to change between the Muslims and the Hindus, the battle. And a Hindu jumped up, a Muslim jumped up over the roof with a knife to kill him. And Gandhi talks to the guy and he says, and the man says, at some point says, "I am in hell." And he said, "Why?" He said, because he gave a gory story about how he killed a child that was a Hindu. And he said, "Ever since I've been in hell and I've been repeating killing." And Gandhi says to him, "But I know a way out of hell." And the guy looks at him and says, "What?" And he says, "You must go take a child that has no family and raise it as your own. But you must raise the child as a Hindu." And the man jumped over the balcony and ran off because he knew he was unable to change his repetitive behavior. In other words, he stayed in hell. But there is a way out. Every time, there's always light. There's always light. And that's that we make the decision to change what we're doing. And we have to fight against what we pattern in our brain. We have to fight against what we pattern in our body with the chemicals. But just like you said, it doesn't take that long.
It is with every addiction. You know that you're doing it over and over and over, and you criticize yourself, and you resist, and you have the internal process going on and on and on. And but there is a time you arrive to where everything, there is a shift, and it's instant. And from, that's how people quit. They may go 1,000 times to rehab for rehabilitation and they won't quit. And then one day they arrive to this point where they know it's done. But let's talk about something else. It scared me in a sense, it really triggered in me, that article you read triggered in me a very difficult feelings. It's almost a feeling of hopelessness, because I don't know anymore what hungry ghost is. It's basically you look in a mirror and you say, I am a hungry ghost. And your goals and ideas and your doingness and whatever you're doing is a pattern. And it's like, I do not know really, even if I change to the best I can be, I still remain hungry ghost, according to this place. There still would be a pattern. So it left me in a place where, so what do we do? What do we do with our hungry ghosts? How we get rid of them? You know what I mean?
Just listening to everything, what it made me think of, we're talking about how everybody has the same way of addiction to something, but we're all talking about how to overcome our addictions to negative things, but you can very easily have just as strong of addictions to positive things. Just for me, I know this isn't for everybody, but for me, listening to our spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, listening to those talks or chanting, you become very much addicted to it, to where you don't have any room for any bad things or harmful things. Just replace them with the good addictions. Yeah, and it's just as strong.
But isn't it also a hungry ghost?
Yeah, because you never get full of it. You just want more and more. Yeah. So, yeah, same thing. There's just a positive and a negative. Did you?
Well, and I had the same thought, too, about replacement behavior. If we want to look at hungry ghosts in ways different than addiction, deeper into Buddhist philosophy, this gets into what's called the bardos. Yeah? B-A-R-D-O-S. So we're talking about death and transformation and what are the stages that may occur when this physical body stops. Hungry ghost is one of the five bardos. So what do? We prepare for our death while we live. And so that's where we start to choose, I think, those replacement behaviors, while we're here.
The Bardos, are you saying, like the Taoists say there are different types of ghosts that stay here, like in between lives, the hungry ghost, I can't remember.
And what are the other four? They're not coming to me right now. There are five. And hungry, yes, that's right.
But I think, let's see, my brother does traditional Chinese acupuncture, and he told me about this. And he said usually a hungry ghost is a ghost that stays on Earth after their body stops because they had like unfinished business of whatever they were after constantly. After searching for, I don't know if that's insane.
And I think that is the hungry ghost Bardos, but it doesn't mean that every single one of us has to go through that.
Yeah.
See, at the moment of death, I mean, I believed as a very small child, I can remember reading when I was 10 years old in Reader's Digest about a near-death experience in an ER and a woman going to the light. And I got it. I was raised without any religion, and when I took this to my parents, they couldn't talk to me about it, and so I figured it out on my own that where we are consciously at the moment of our death in this body is mirrored pretty much when the body stops. So we have some locus of control, maybe, on which bardo happens first. For us, and which one we can bypass, maybe. And then secondly, and I'll pass this on back around, there is a very well-known Buddhist who achieved Lama status, a woman in Colorado, who was deemed a reincarnation of a 13th century female Lama and got inducted. Anyway, her name is Soltrima Leone. And before her lamahood, she developed a program called Feeding the Demons Within. So that's a book, and you can find it. And it's a practice of actually giving that ghost everything it wants over and over and over again till you're just satiated it. So that's another thing. Give it what it wants so much that you get beyond it. So feeding the demons within is a big practice, and it's part of what helped her be recognized. So.
Anybody else?
Thank you. Hope it didn't skip anybody. What I was thinking of, though, and it ties in with the attitude, easier said than done, but anytime you try to fight something, you polarize it, you give it more energy. Thinking about the hungry ghosts, I think a lot about the terminology of like the wounded child also. You take good care of it, right? You have the hungry ghost, but what is it? We change when the pain of holding on becomes greater than the fear of letting go. And at that point, I think with the hungry ghost, it comes up. I don't think it goes away. It's going to continue to attach itself to different things. But I also think that, in a way, the hungry ghost is serving us. And that might sound kind of misleading, but what I mean is, and that's why I brought up that line, we change when the pain of holding on becomes greater than the fear of letting go. We're kind of clinging to comfort. We don't want to feel uncomfortable. The discomfort, of course, is where we grow, if we can allow ourselves to feel it. And when I think of surrender, I think of feelings. I think of letting go into feelings. And I think the hungry ghost is serving us in this way, in that it's a distraction. We were actually just talking about this a little bit beforehand. It's a distraction from the pain. It's serving to put the focus outside of ourselves so that we don't feel a pain that we fear. This is not conscious, of course, but we fear that if we start to feel the pain, we won't ever come out of it. We won't ever really surface. So it's interesting. It's like it is the psyche's defense mechanism against a trauma that we haven't fully felt. And to feel that trauma, we have to be fully present. And that's why it's so hard to be present. But yeah, I think any time you try to fight something, you polarize it and you give it more energy. And it's very, once again, easier said than done. The last thing I want to do is surrender into an uncomfortable feeling when I'm in the midst of that feeling. You know, when I'm feeling good, I'm like, oh yeah, it's simple, yeah, but yeah, surrender, I guess. Yeah, I think about death also. We're just like, being alive is just learning how to die, so we have to surrender over and over and over and over again, and that's just practice for that big letting go. But I think that the hungry ghost doesn't ever really go away, and Thich Nhat Hanh talks about where us as a house. And you know, Carl Jung used to talk about in dreams how when we were in a house, that was our psyche. In the basement, what kind of seeds do we want to plant? Do we want to feed the hungry ghost? And of course, feeding the hungry ghost is that samsara, that bottomless insanity. Well, what are we giving our energy to? What are we giving our attention to? Like, the difference between misery and happiness is what we do with our attention. But yeah, that's I want to stop talking. Next.
Thank you, Patrick.
Yes.
Wonderful point.
I think one thing when you are saying you kind of feel hopeless, and part of that is because we in our human selves label everything, and we become attached to those labels so bad. When really, God, Source, Universe, whatever you choose to call Him, is love only. There is no other side to Him. And when we recognize that, we understand that we're here to experience. And there's no good or bad. That's why, you know, I came from a Baptist background that said, you know, God can't look upon sin, so I always felt bad, and so He never was able to look at me because I was bad. And when the scripture said God cannot look upon sin, He literally doesn't see sin. He doesn't see good or bad. That's what our free will is all about. We just make choices that weren't for our best. And so we go, okay, that was a bad choice. Now I start over and I don't repeat that choice. And it really is that simple, that when you love yourself and you know that there is no other side to God other than love, then it becomes much easier to just release those things that don't serve us anymore. We're not addicted to them. We have to change our belief system of who God is. God doesn't say, you are an alcoholic, so for the rest of your life you are an alcoholic. He says, you made a choice that wasn't for the best of you. And stop looking at your body. We are not our body. We become the observer of our thoughts, and we realize we're so much more than that. And that song, The Wizard of Oz, I just learned this a year ago, and I've watched the movie twice since then just to get a whole new perspective. The man who actually wrote that, he got it. This is a dream that we're living in. And when Glinda came to Dorothy in the orb, what did she say to her? She told her, you've had it within you all along. We just forgot who we are. So that's, if we just remember who we are, everything else just fades and goes in the background.
Who was it?
Yeah.
There you go.
We just forget who we are.
Yeah.
And that's the essence of our hungry ghost. I feel that hungry ghost really wants us to remember. And who we are when we remember. And how do we walk the path remembering? How we need to, it's another, I am going in again into the another part of hungry ghost, because if I am remembered that I am soul in this physical body and live from this place every day, everything changes. But am I also feeding hungry ghost? And how do I make the switch?
Thank you.
You know, I had a dream one time that symbolized what I want. And in that dream, I was shooting past all the planets and everything in the solar system and was moving on and just looking at the spectacular beauty around me. And it was such an exhilarating feeling. I couldn't get over that for weeks. In fact, well, that dream was 35, 40 years ago, and I'll never forget it. And the bottom line is that I was able to do that, that I was able to move past. I was not attached. There wasn't something pulling me back down. And when I got into chemical addiction, it struck me that those chemicals that I was addicted to were part of this earth. And I would not be able to leave this realm if I was attached to them, if I was connected. And I had to let them go. That didn't mean that I or someone else could not use something of this earth, but that I did not want to be absolutely attached to it. Because that's where my hungry ghost comes in. Then I have to turn in and feed it over and over again. Right now, the thing I'm attached to is my two little dogs, and I think, oh, gee, you know, if I were to croak, would I be able to leave or what? But I'm not worrying about that part.
You're making me think this morning. I'm not used to it. So it seems to me that what the hungry ghost wants is love. It wants to feel connection. It wants to be filled with, but substitutes with other things. For me, food. Food's a good one. So I think building connection and meditation is a way of feeling connection to all, including myself, listening to music, taking care of myself with a lovely bath or a walk in the woods. All these things that I realize help me feel like part of the all that is, the one, the source, but that I forget to do. Hugging a tree, getting off of Facebook, all those little substitute things that keep my mind occupied so that I can't be in my heart. And giving myself an occasional treat, too, which is feeding the inner child that Patrick reminded us of, is another way of the hungry ghost and the hurt inner, you know, the inner child that we ignore, neglect. It's another way of looking at us and our connection and our loneliness. The inner child often seems very much alone and lonely and unrecognized. So, feeling love, loving ourselves, and building connection and community, I think, is a real good way of dealing with the hungry ghost. Next.
I feel like she hit the essence of this whole talk, saying that we have the hungry ghost because we aren't in touch with who we are as eternal spirit souls. And the only way to get in touch with that is to build your connection with God. And in your connection with God, that is the only way that you will finally feel satisfied. So unless you are searching God and building that connection, then you're always looking for all these other things that never fill you up. So I thought you really hit the essence of it.
I want to include that. We are all God, and so building connections with other humans also builds
and other living creatures of all kinds. Just to remember, because so many people forget that.
Oh, yeah. We're all part of the process of God.
You have something else?
It's everything.
I am studying, I am listening to a Dr. Zach Bush lately, expert on microbiome. And he talks about our genome. It's 20,000 of a gene combination. A flea is 30, and fruit fly is 17,000. So we are between the fruit fly and the flea. Somewhere, as human being genetically built. And yet, bacteria, viruses, fungi, parasites, whatever living in us are 1,000 times more than our humanity within us. We are one with everything which is alive. With everything. With every blade of grass, with every bacteria, we are one. And if we don't recognize that God is around us in everything, and that as we walk, everything watches us, and everything supports us.
That's a wonderful summation. Did we lose that? No. I think that's a wonderful summation from Rhonda and Jadwiga.
From everyone.
Yes, and everyone.
Like we went to
We always do in group discussion.
Yeah. The Hungry Ghost is really seeking love. And like the song says, looking for love in all the wrong places, and you know, looking for it in whatever it's addicted to, food, power, sex, whatever, that is never going to get it love, because it doesn't know that that's what it needs, and that's what it wants, and that's what it is. And that's I think that's the biggest secret of all. It's not just that's what it wants, it's forgotten that that's what it is. So, it is now time to move on. And